Welcome to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner.
What are you talking about, Mr. James?
Well, Miss Aneke, if you're nasty, and damn right, you both are nasty.
You best be nasty.
I said you both are nasty, okay. As in both of yous is nasty.
Equal sides.
Anyways.
I'm nasty in the sheets and I'm nasty in the streets.
You heard it here first, everybody, and we ain't even gotten into the episode. Well, Miss Nasty, we are going to be talking about, so Pride just ended.
Yes.
And a lot of people have a lot of great fun, a lot of people do a lot of great protesting, and a lot of people just really like to party.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to have a little conversation. Let's have a little talk, everybody.
Mm.
I want to talk about drugs in the LGBT community.
Okay.
Who's doing what? What are the percentages? And it's not a shame corner or anything.
No, just facts.
I want to have some facts and some conversations and point you to some responsible resources of what you can do and how to party responsibly.
I love it.
What are you doing?
I am talking about Title IX.
Okay.
Especially in the educational industry.
It's an arena.
Yeah.
You work in the educational arena.
I do.
Okay.
Because me personally, and I don't want to talk about everybody else, but I've always heard about Title IX, but I didn't know what it directly affects and what we need to be upholding in our schools and hold them accountable to fulfill what Title IX actually is keeping upstanding before it's taken away from us.
All right. Oh, they're going to try to take it away.
I mean, everybody's trying to take everything away.
Everything must go. It's an America sales event.
That's what
everything
it feels like.
Must go. But Nega is here to hold you accountable.
Yes.
We'll go get him, Miss Thing. Well, let's do it.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, we got our sips of LaCroix.
Well, this is the first time I've had a LaCroix as a 32-year-old man.
Happy birthday, James!
Late.
I said it multiple times on the day.
And you know what? Not only that, give me mad props, Aneke wrote a beautiful tear-jerking message on my Facebook wall.
Was it tear-jerking?
I got a lot of likes.
I People talked about our booties popping.
We do have some popping booties.
Our booties look good in that picture.
We did a photo shoot that I don't think we've... Well, first of all, you guys have seen the new album cover.
Yes,
You're liking it? You're feeling it?
I feel like people like it.
I think people I haven't heard boo about if they don't like it. So if you don't like it, you know.
Also, I have to say, somebody said, I think online somewhere, that did we Photoshop our jump? No, jumped that high.
Because what people don't realize about the Wonder Twins of podcasting is we've been doing jump photos for well over a decade.
Oh, yeah. We're skilled in the jump photo.
It is such a science. So
it is.
We'll let you in on, we're going to start it off with how to do a proper jump photo.
Yes, how?
Well, first, make some eye contact with whoever your group members are.
Yes, you got to know who you're jumping with.
And make sure that you yourself and the cameraman, everybody involved knows if the jump is happening on 1, 2, 3, go.
Exactly.
Like, when are we in the air? So
yes.
Is it 1, 2, 3, and then we jump?
Or do you jump on the 3?
Or on the 3. So make sure everyone's in the coordinates at the same time. And the biggest trick is put on some sort of a smile, look like you're enjoying it.
Yeah, you don't want to look like you're grimacing, because a lot of times people will jump and they'll be like,
looks like they're taking a shit in the middle of the air, and that's not fun.
No.
I don't want to see anybody jump.
I don't
want to
see a double deuce jump.
Don't take a double deuce. That's not what the photo was about, because I'm going to be like, get the photo out of my face. And then the next thing which you're going to want to do is make sure the arms are up in the air.
It's always fun to do an arm pose.
Arm pose up in the air. Make sure to bend the legs. That's the biggest trick, what people don't realize. The legs get bent, right?
Yes, because if you look at the picture and then you imagine our legs not bent, we're not that high off the ground.
And a lot of people, a lot of rookies, you know, they'll
just
keep
do a straight peg leg
and it's
jump.
Like, okay, you're off the air, not that much. But if you bend the legs, you get the height, you look like you are, who's a jumper? Magic Johnson? Was
something
he jumping?
Like that, Magic, Jordan, Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan, we don't talk about him on this
or
podcast.
Or you can also do.
We don't talk about him on this podcast.
I didn't bring him up.
Sorry. He just gets my blood
You could
boiling.
Do a rock star where one leg is bent and the other leg is kicking forward. Like you do an air guitar. That's a fun one.
Oh, that is a fun one too. You can have some fun. So there's different variations, but I think the key is make sure you jump at the same time, arms in the air,
smile on your face.
No, you gotta put a smile. More than a smile.
Serious is weird.
Yeah. Sorry, Tyra.
You gotta do a smile.
Yeah, Tyra, I wanna see that mouth open.
Yes.
And smile it up.
So we gotta give props to Kevin Z, our photographer, and Corner Kid, longtime listener, longtime friend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought it was someone else as well. No. Oh, but him. He's all of those things. Yeah, long-time listener, long-time friend. Thank you for the photography. He is, I'm going to throw him out there. He's happy to snap your jump photos. We haven't talked to him.
I know. Why are you promoting?
Throwing him out there.
You can throw me out there on the podcast, but I don't know if you want to throw
Happy to coordinate the scheduling for any of Kevin's potential jump photos. I want to circle to something that I wanted to touch on really quickly.
Let's circle and touch.
I would love to circle and touch. You mentioned, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it.
Okay. Because
I don't like him.
Okay, we'll do a brief.
But Michael Jordan.
I thought we don't mention him on this podcast.
I know.
Here you are mentioning him.
Hockey Shorten, we'll call him. Hockey Shorten.
Sure. Good old hockey.
Hockey Shorten. Comparing, like, you know, there's a comparison between him and LeBron James, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is that comparison? I'm interviewing you like you are, like you're married to LeBron James.
As the NBA commissioner.
What is that comparison about? Why do people compare them? Why do they compare them?
They compare because there are certain time frames in the scope of sports that there is the superstar.
Okay.
So in the 90s, it was Hockey Shorten.
Hockey Shorten. People are going to be really confused. We're talking about Michael Jordan's stupid face. And if you're confused as why we don't like talking about him, there's an episode where we talked about it. He became a billionaire partly because he also...
cheap labor from the prisons.
Yeah, he invested into the prison industrial complex. It's part of where his billions comes from. And they also made Jordans in those prisons. And young kids were killing each other for these Jordans, and he never came out and said, y'all don't shoot each other.
Not to mention he's a known asshole. And he has, like, apparently stories have come out where he's, like, tortured his teammates and, like, goaded them and, like, teased them and he's a bully.
What's crazy is that kids today still even wear the Jordans, still exist.
It's iconic.
It's insane. Like, number 23, people still wear the number 23.
I know. It's beyond him. LeBron James is 23 too.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. But LeBron James has been in the game for hella long.
Okay.
He's really good at what he does. He's the superstar basketball player.
Right.
But since I'm a Warriors fan, sorry, listeners who aren't Warriors fans.
Sorry, she's not sorry.
I live in Oakland. It's my hometown team. I've been rooting for them since they were a stupid team. I deserve this.
You were one of the few, and I am calling all of you. I'm here. I was in the Bay Area for 6 years, and I saw all these people getting all these Warrior jerseys. Go fuck yourselves. Because where were you?
Bandwagon.
Where were you when we had to,
I had to deal with Buzzy, the stupidest mascot with fucking lightning bolts on the side of his head, or whatever the fuck his name was.
Dragged to many a Warrior game when I was a kid.
They were stoops.
We would maybe go see it if the Chicago Bulls were playing or whatnot.
Right, exactly.
That was it.
So now they're a team on top, and LeBron James, people love him because I don't think he's similar to Michael Jordan. I just think he's
he's the iconic one.
He's the iconic one on top.
Well, I was trying to throw some shade. At first I was like, oh, LeBron James, like, he's, you know, got nothing on Jordan or whatnot. But then I found out this fun fact. And so I wanted to say this because I want to throw a fun fact about LeBron James.
Okay.
Apparently he does hella good stuff. Like, he gives hella money to the community. And he does a lot of, like, outreach and stuff. And I think it's just more than I think Jordan did.
Right. I will be the first to say I like LeBron off the court, but I hate him on the court.
Okay, interesting.
He fakes an injury so much.
Oh.
He's annoying as a player.
And the award goes to LeBron James.
Yeah. Mm. But off the court, he's an excellent, upstanding person.
So I was going to try to make a comparison. Like, he's a freaky nice person on the court and a freaky nice person.
He's a dick on the courts and a dandy in the streets. I don't know.
He's a dick on the court and a dandy on the streets, LeBron James. I'm sure he'll love that quote.
He will not like it. So I have a question for you.
What?
You said that you saw Henrietta Lacks.
Yes, I was talking to you about this.
But I want to know, we didn't really go into it.
Oh, you want more details about it? On air? Yes. My opinion? Oh, I don't know.
You asked me to ask this!
I'm trying to play coy. But, like, what if Oprah listens to this? Because here's the thing. I was super excited to see this because, you know, I love me some... There's some black people in a movie doing some great stuff.
We're gonna see it.
Not Tyler Perry.
There we go.
Sign me up!
And it's on HBO. And you like a Rose Byrne.
Like is understated.
Okay.
I love me. That girl is a woman, that human being, that artista. extraordinaire.
I know you love yourself some Rose Byrne.
I do. Like, I always want to so shake random. You so hard.
Because I know.
She's like one of my favorites. Know, how do you know?
Because we've been to many of Rose Byrne movies, and you have always talked about how much you like her.
She is so good. And she's so good.
Random.
Bridesmaid, she was fucking hilarious. Fucking hilarious in Bridesmaid. Totally underrated. She was in that spy movie with Melissa McCarthy.
Right.
She was just amazing.
You
she,
love yourself a Rose Byrne.
Damages. She was killing.
I know. I fucking love Damages.
And she's always so different in every movie. And she's like fucking Australian.
Yeah.
And then you see her in like in this Henrietta Lacks movie.
Right.
And she plays this girl from Portland so well.
Oh, she does.
She plays this like nice white girl from Portland so well. You're just like, oh my God, that is such a nice white girl from Portland.
But it's Rose Byrne.
And it's Rose Byrne. But she's like, she really transforms. Like, I'm like anytime Nicolas Cage is in a movie, it's like, there is Nicolas Cage.
Because it's Nicolas Cage.
But like, there's nothing about like his physicalness that changes his voice. But right. like, she transformed in that movie. And I will say this.
Okay.
Oprah was great in picking her because she's so talented, but at the same time, them in a scene together, Oprah could not
stand up. Damn it, but Oprah's an actress.
She
was an actress before she had her show.
And it's been a while since she's maybe been in a movie.
She was doing Greenleaf on OWN that nobody saw.
Yeah, I mean, maybe no one saw it. Or
is it because Oprah has a hard time disappearing into a role?
I think she's tried her damnedest. Mm. And I think that I don't know if Oprah has an acting coach or someone to coach her through. And because, like, she was playing Henrietta. And, like, the movie is the story itself. And I think actually what we should do is we should do an episode about, well, I would challenge you. Mm-hmm. So I put this in your pocket.
Oh, thanks. Here's some homework, Aneke. Do it.
Good luck, Aneke.
Do your own corner.
I want a story about Henrietta. I want a story about Henrietta. The listeners are demanding for it because you don't have to watch the movie. I think we can tell the information about the story.
Oh yeah, Henrietta Lacks had cancer, mm-hmm. and she went to this was like in the 40s. She went to the doctors. They were able to extract a cell from her, which mm-hmm. is the only cell known to man that can reproduce itself. Mm-hmm. So they've used this cell to cure diseases all over the world,
like any disease, like and all the sort of we see people still mm-hmm. use it. And
it's called the Gila.
Yeah, because they took her name off of it, mm-hmm. and so her and her family never got any credit for it. They never saw like a dime or anything, and their right. family like is living not well in Baltimore at all, and just all these different problems. And the movie is very interesting because I think maybe the movie tried to do too much in it, because there's a lot of conversations that this is sort of connected to mental health.
Right.
Even like one of the kids end up going to prison.
Oh wow!
Just a lot of treatment about just black folks in this country, and even just with science and how it gets treated or whatnot.
Right.
So there's really great conversations that are happening in it. So maybe we go back and revisit that story. But like even like the cure for polio. Like there's so many different. Mm-hmm. cures that we now have
because of this woman
who got like no credit or anything. This is like this black woman, so once again sort of the erasure
right.
of black culture and from all the things that we've done.
Yes.
And then so Oprah plays Henrietta Lacks's daughter
okay.
who's on the search
yeah.
to find out all this information and
true story and
her daughter and like she has like some just a lot of like different sort of issues, maybe some mental stuff,
mental
physical
health.
Things. But then like, the thing is like, you know, I'm an actor and I just be studying that like acting stuff.
Right.
And like there's just certain things that like Oprah had a cane throughout it,
mm-hmm.
but wasn't using it consistently. Like she'd be like waving the cane around and stuff.
No.
And there were some scenes that were so good, but like sometimes it just seemed like it was too much story. And it was like an hour and a half.
That's not that long for
but
a movie.
They put in so much.
They just crammed it all in.
But it was so weird because like even an hour into it I was like I'm ready for this to be done. Like I felt like
wow.
I got the main story that I needed to get.
Mm-hmm.
It just was a lot of it wasn't consistent, and David C. Wolfe I think was the director, so I just was really surprised that like
mm-hmm.
it didn't feel very consistent in like mm-hmm. how the story was being told. So
I hear that a lot of people wanted to see more of actual Henrietta.
It was a lot of Oprah.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, girl, why didn't you just be Henrietta? I guess because she would be too old to play Henrietta.
Yeah, they had What's-Her-Face from Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. And she was, yeah, it was good. It just, like, it felt uneven. Not all the acting felt necessarily balanced and whatnot. But Rose did a great job. But I just wasn't that. And I love me some Oprah. And this feels blasphemous. I almost feel like Oprah's gonna strike me down by saying this, but I didn't think she was the best actor ever.
But we still love ourselves some Oprah.
Oprah is like,
and the story needs to be out, so that's good that she's promoting the story to come out.
Absolutely.
Oh, if you're in the Bay Area, this is a terrible promotion, but there is a play in San Francisco that's about Henrietta Lacks.
Is there really?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that a bad plug? Go see
because
it.
Because I don't know the name or where it's playing.
Google it.
Or what's happening.
Internet it.
Yeah.
There's a play about it.
Yeah.
Is Oprah in it?
No.
Is Rose in it?
No.
Well, still go see it.
Go see it.
Go see it.
This one woman that I met when I was doing some other stuff is in it. And that's how I know. She was plugging it. I think she plays Henrietta.
Oh.
And it looks like the cast is I would say, at least 90% black.
Amazing.
So it's in San Francisco. I don't know if it's still running, but check it out if it is.
So there is a movie, a play in the Bay Area about Henrietta starring this girl that Aneke knows and met. Go see it.
You I don't think it would be hard to find.
You should put that on the marquee.
Yeah, exactly.
Aneke knows this girl who's being in Henrietta play in Bay Area. Done. Can we switch gears?
Yes.
There's something that, like, I don't watch this show, so I want to pick your brain about this.
I have
been seeing all of this. I can't turn away from anything without something being like, Bachelor in Paradise, crazy drama.
I'm about to break it down for you.
Sex scandal.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening?
Okay, well, as your first official Minority Corner Bachelor Nation participant.
I did not know that you were all up in that Bachelor.
I go to tomorrow night, I'm going to my friend's Bachelor night. Where we go and we talk over it. So I watch it separately on my own.
And so this isn't Bachelor in Paradise. This is
we watch
Black
it all.
Bachelor.
We watch it all.
We have our first Black Bachelorette. That's hard to say.
We have our
first Black Bachelorette. I guess it's not that hard.
Rachel.
Just two B's.
Okay.
Rachel.
So the reason that we bring up Bachelorette is because one of the participants in Bachelor in Paradise is from Rachel's season.
Oh, he was from Rachel's season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he already kicked her off.
She already kicked him off.
Oh, she already kicked him off. Got it. Yeah.
But Bachelor in Paradise is like basically the drunk cousin of Bachelor. So
that's
it's all the rejects go to Mexico, drink, and their goal is to find...
To drink.
Well, yeah.
To drink and get wasted.
But you find a partner, you're dating.
Okay.
You get a rose. That's how you stay there.
If the someone doesn't pick you... The roses are always coming back.
I know, it's true. But if somebody doesn't pick you as their rose, you get kicked out.
So it's like musical chairs.
Yeah, so the goal is to find a person so you can stay there and keep having sex and drinking.
Perfect. I mean, that just sounds like my life.
Yeah.
But actually, you know what? I can't fault this concept because this does sound like paradise.
It's fun.
You just get to drink and have sex
trashy,
in Mexico.
It's the trashiest shit, but it's the funnest one.
I heard the rumor of how this got started, this whole entire show, was that they used to get to have these bachelor reunions.
Mm-hmm.
And this is essentially what would happen, is that they would, and the producers found out about this, they would all meet up and they would get drunk and have sex with each other.
Yep.
And then one of the producers was like, there's our next show.
I believe it because that's exactly what happens. But they make it goofy.
Okay.
Like at one point, whenever
wasn't a girl talking to herself or something?
They always, whenever it's clear that one of the contestants is talking to a producer,
yeah,
they'll splice it with like a crab or like a raccoon.
Stop it.
Like they're talking to
That is creative. I gotta give it to you.
Oh, it's so good. Okay.
I gotta give it to you.
So before I get into the drama, I feel like I need to outline who one of the participants were. So there's two.
There's two, yeah.
DeMario and Corinne.
Yes.
So Corinne was in the season before, the Bachelor season, where Rachel was actually in the season.
Oh, Rachel's connected into this.
Yeah, so it's all of these people. So Corinne and Rachel were on Nick's season.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to know about
that. I'm not already confused.
Corinne was drunk, blonde, just kind of trashy, rich. She had a nanny. That was her thing.
Oh, that was the nanny girl.
She was nanny girl.
Oh, that girl.
Yeah.
Ew, I saw clips about that girl.
Yeah.
She had a nanny with her on the show.
She brought the nanny on later,
she was like
but the
a
nanny
20-year-old woman.
Exactly.
Did the nanny not get a rose? How does that work?
Wouldn't
that be so dope if the nanny like stayed there longer than she did?
Knowing Bachelor in Paradise, she for sure brought her nanny because they take all the goofy shit from and then heighten it.
They're like even
crazy.
They probably even do like some confessionals with the nanny to the producer.
Yeah, they're getting goofier and goofier. Like on Rachel's season, a dude brought like a prop doll with his like, he brought a doll. But they keep bringing the doll back in each shot and putting him in like windows and giving him like subtitles and he speaks in French. Bachelor is fun to
watch. Someone's smoking a lot of weed as they're editing and creating the show.
Okay, so that's Corinne.
Okay.
The other one Nanny is DeMario. Girl.
Yes.
DeMario is a black guy who is on Rachel's season.
Yeah.
Rachel's season is heavy in black guys, which is good. It's something that you don't really see
which
that
much. Which is great, because, like, I know not a lot about this Bachelor stuff, but whoever's, like, second runner-up then gets to be the next Bachelor or Bachelorette
generally,
or something.
Generally, sometimes.
But the reason why there's been so, like, this Rachel woman is the first black Bachelorette, because black folks are always so early voted
token,
out.
Like, get out of my face.
If you're the minority, like, you are out first, second,
really
third
fast.
Episode, right?
Yes. That's usually the joke.
So this is the idea that hopefully now this can be a turning point that you might get some more variety.
But it's not. But anyway, so
are
DeMario,
all the black guys already gone from Rachel's show?
Not all of them. There's one left.
She kind of needs to keep one just for, like, just for us, Rachel.
She's keeping one.
You gotta keep one.
She likes one, but I have to give her credit. The other ones that she got rid of, we can go really into this. But I'll try to keep it truncated.
There's a whole other show that you can listen to on Maximum Fun. It's called Rosebuds.
Yes, listen to it.
They will give you all the dirt about this. But we're okay.
Yeah.
We'll keep going.
Okay, so I'm just going to keep plugging ahead because there's a lot we could talk about with race. But anyways, so DeMario.
DeMario, yes.
DeMario isn't a saint either. Mm-hmm. His calling card for being in Rachel's season is he was like front runner, doing really good, and then his ex-girlfriend shows up.
What?
And she goes, and she's like, what? Literally looks like just like a regular round the way girl. Yeah.
She just showed up. Like,
acrylic.
How did she just show up?
Well, she showed up.
The producers were like,
sure.
See, that's fucked up.
But no, it's not.
Okay.
Because she shows up and she was like, why are you on the show, DeMario? You still have my house key.
You still got my keys, baby. I can't even get home.
And he's so trashy that when he showed up, he was like, who is this?
Oh.
And then she's like, what? And Rachel's like, what the hell's going on? And so she's like, you still have my key. And then he was like, oh, yeah, I sent it back to you in the mail. And this woman's like, what? And then she shows Rachel a text message change that was like from a day ago between her and DeMario. So Rachel, being the badass fucking boss that she is, woman in her 30s, lawyer, awesome, black woman, bringing serious awesome goodness to the Bachelor franchise, was like, go away.
Yeah.
She was like, you need to go.
Wow. And go return those keys to that woman so she can get in her house.
Exactly.
But she locked out and she was like, listen, producers, I can't get into my house. He got my
keys.
DeMario
got my keys.
He's like, and when she's seriously like, who this? Like, it's a cell phone.
He was like,
who
is this?
Number.
When they showed up to her face.
Terrible.
Okay. So they're both terrible people.
Okay.
So the controversy is, so Bachelor in Paradise, we already set up, you get drunk, you have sex, you get a rose, you stay on the show.
Yes.
So clearly there's been a lot of tricky situations with drunk people having sex on the show.
Yeah.
Consent.
Right.
So apparently what happened was the two of them got drunk, went into the hot tub, and started to have some sort of sexual intercourse. Then days later, a producer said that he was uncomfortable with the footage.
Oh, that was a female producer.
I did too, but then recently I saw like he.
Oh,
so it was a male producer.
Changing. Okay, all right, okay.
Came out and was like, I feel uncomfortable. And then I think he sued Bachelor.
What?
Because he was uncomfortable. And then Corinne was like, I don't remember anything. And then she's worried about consent. And then they're trying to put the blame on DeMario, being like, why did you let this happen? Kind of like a date rapey sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then he was like, but I was wasted though too.
Right.
So this whole thing is like a jumbly mess because of that.
Which that like the, I'm sorry, but the producers for this show, you created this and you continuously, like I'm like all these reality TV producers continuously just feed these folks alcohol. Like what the fuck did you think was going to happen? Like there's been cases on The Real World. There was that Tanya girl who like, she was completely violated or whatnot. Like they keep creating these sort of atmospheres of drinking. Like what the fuck did you think was going to happen? And it's interesting because like, when it first happened, like I usually, when there is a sexual assault case, I automatically tend to side with a woman. That is me. Because I think that women don't tend to lie about sexual assault, and I think that so many hide away from coming out about it.
Exactly.
But I saw that DeMario interview, and I felt bad for him. I feel, it's from what it seems like, the way that he describes it, like, and there's camera footage, so just review the camera tape from what he says. She put his vagina. He ain't got a vagina.
He ain't got one.
Well, someone put a vagina in his face, and it wasn't his. And that she like had stood up and was doing things that he felt like a sober girl couldn't do. I guess I feel bad that like it seems like, you know, his job was lost and just like all the things that like, and I know this seems bad, but it's like, he seems like a nice guy. And like, I think that he's these not. Folks just, he's not.
Well, I mean, considering Rachel's season, both of them are trash. I'm sorry if you love DeMario and Corinne listeners, but these two people are trash people. And their equal seasons are trashy equally, both of them.
Fair enough.
The villain, I think, is the producer.
Yeah.
Because you can't. Let it happen, and then 2 days later, you should have intervened if you thought something was fucked up happening. Because I truly believe, because I'm a longtime watcher, that they were both plastered.
Yeah.
They both were plastered.
Absolutely.
Because that's just what they do on the show.
I think,
And if something weird happened, the producer should have stepped in. The thing that makes me uncomfortable, and I think that you were circling to it, is the longtime thing, just like remember the Greenwood Massacre, is the dynamic of a black man. And a white woman.
And that's the thing that I see. And that's the thing is that just like as soon as I, because I only read about the story. I didn't see any pictures. I didn't see who was who. And when I first saw that he was a black guy, I was like, uh-oh, this is not going to bode well for him.
Right.
And then just seeing like who he really, like just seeing him in an interview, it humanized him for me. So even myself, like I have certain biases that I have built up. I had already taken sides in it or whatnot. But then you see the human side of it. And then plus like you see, like it just sucks. Like, I mean, he is going to be so vilified. He is so fucked.
Right.
And they have found a scapegoat, like he is done, and it sucks. On one end, I'm like, it sucks that his life is completely fucking ruined for this thing.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, don't get super fucking wasted on reality television. Like, I can imagine, like, are you being that fucking wasted that you're just literally just having sex.
Right.
Like, fucking, like, not even just like, oh, we're quietly doing it in the jacuzzi.
No,
it sounds like they were just all over the place. Yeah.
And the jacuzzi is a central spot that has a lot of cameras there. So clearly they were being, you know, on camera. I think I always have to side-eye everything, like I had to say. Because I've watched them both on both of their seasons, I know that they're both
terrible people.
Trash bags. So I just kind of am like, both of you guys are terrible. Especially, they both, like, those are the two pinnacle trash bags of the season.
And look, they both wound up being in a trashy mess of a story together.
That's why I'm kind of like, producer, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What's going on, producer? So it makes me a little curious, especially what's going on in Rachel's season right now. There's some weird race dynamics going on where they're literally taking advantage of the situation and not playing it for good. They're playing it for fucking awkward and weird. Like, they put a racist in there.
Oh, fun. Why would you have like a racist in there? I can't
they claim that,
that
yeah, they claim that, that they didn't know.
Okay, I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
You know what? I've been to that reality TV casting process, and they do a thorough investigation. It's like they take you through the ringer, and they purposely find the crazies to put them on these shows because that's fucking entertaining.
Yeah.
Well, the note to all the corner kids out there, keep your trashy ass away from the cameras because that shit does not go away.
Right.
I'm concerned about your careers.
And if you're going to be on a reality show, know your stereotypes and try not to play towards them.
There you go. Well, you know, speaking of trashy kids, though, some of y'all got really trashy this weekend. So let's talk about potential LGBT trashiness. No, not really. But we're going to talk about...
That was a good segue.
Was that a good? Just what's going on in the LGBT community? Who's doing what? Are y'all drunk? Are you drunk right now listening to it? It's not shame. Let's just have a conversation.
James's Corner, or James's Corner.
You partying? Are you partying?
I'm partying. Ooh, yeah. I need some water.
Oh.
I'm peeking.
Uh-oh.
I'm peeking.
Oh.
Woo!
There she goes. Do you ever see that? You remind me of, like, did you ever see that story about Kiki?
Delivery service?
No, not that one. It was a YouTube video where it was this, let's do the fork in the garbage disposal. Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, yes! Where it's like a performance.
It's a performance.
And they're doing the dances.
Yeah
I love that one.
That's what you reminded me of just now.
Nice.
She's peeking. Oh, Kiki. Get out of there, Kiki. Oh, no. That's what you reminded me of. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google let's do the fork in the garbage disposal. It'll change your
life. It's really good.
Life.
Ding, 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 ding.
So after this Pride Fiesta birthday extravaganza I went on, after reading all this shit about like DeMario and Corinne Nanny Lady or whatever, I was like, damn, folks are getting really fucked up.
Yeah.
And I was just curious. I was like, what do the numbers look like for LGBT folks or even just, you know, minorities? Like, what is happening? And then even after an incident, I saw at one of these parties, I saw someone, a new friend I had just met, on the ground, having a seizure. Oh, not doing God. A dance, having a seizure, just having too much fun.
Too much.
Thankfully, survived with, you know, I got involved, a little heroics from myself. But it just was a lot.
But you know what really surprised me was the area that you went to that you just
So I also went down to at one of, you know, there's a lot of parties that and I'm huge. I'm not saying don't party or whatnot.
Yeah.
Or whatnot, but you know, there's, and I think that's all great in like celebration, you know?
Right.
And one thing that I really loved at Pride, really love about New York Pride too, is it's such like a cultural experience in New York Pride.
Yeah.
You literally, like some of the floats there, there was like the Caribbean float.
Cool.
And then there was like Middle Eastern folks with families.
Aww.
Like you get that I did not see that in San Francisco when I was here.
Because it's all straight people.
It's a lot of, well, that's true. But I also think you just like, I just love New York Pride so much because it's such like a worldwide, because New York is center of the universe. Parade.
Calm down, Mr. New York Yankee hat.
Oh, I am wearing a New York Yankee hat. But it's true. It like literally is such like a world pride experience. I've been to different prides. You just don't get, it's also a 7-hour pride, mind you.
Yeah.
Got to do it in shifts.
Yeah, I know.
So, and I'm all about like the marches and the celebration. I was on a, I ended my pride experience on the Love Boat cruise,
which sounds so magical.
And it was just, I was just so grateful for all the brothers and sisters who've come before, so I can just dance on a boat at the end of the night with fireworks going and go to all these different dance parties and have a good time.
I love it.
And it just like, I mean, just to see so far where we've come. But at one of the parties, there's a new acquaintance of mine on the ground, twitching and kicking, still survived.
Yeah.
But we went down to the triage area, people.
Which is crazy. That's like war.
We went down to, and it was like, this. There's an every, any circuit party or dance party you go to, there is a room that has curtains. You maybe walked by it before, because I've seen it before and I've walked by.
Yeah.
Didn't really think much of it. Behind it is a bunch of like EMTs and paramedics and folks who are ready to help people who are having too much fun.
Which to me is shocking.
Too much drugs, you know, too much in their system, not partying responsibly. None of that. So I went down there. It was like all these people, like there was like all these half these shirtless, half naked men, just like, you know, like with friends, like holding their hands.
It like was it's like, war.
It was like a war. And I'm like, y'all, we just trying to dance and have a good time. Like, this is too much. So I wanted to look at like, well, do LGBT people like have, is there, you know, higher rates or something? Mm-hmm. So there's one statistic that I want to run through. And then there's another set that kind of is going to break it down a little bit more.
Okay.
So apparently nearly about 40% of those who identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, again, the T is not considered in this, so.
Okay, just to keep in mind.
I didn't do this survey, but just keeping that in mind. Claim to have used illicit drugs in the past year compared to about 17% who identify as straight. So 40% of LGBT people have used illicit drugs compared to 17%.
Whoa, that's huge!
So they're doing it a lot more, right? The community's doing it a lot more.
Wow.
When it comes to marijuana, it's about 30% of LGBT folks and then 12% of straight folks.
What? This feels really skewered.
Yeah, about misuse of prescription pain relievers, about 10% of LGBT people compared to 4.5% of straight folks.
Is this because there's a smaller amount of LGBT
people? This is a percentage.
Wow, yeah, that's right.
It's a percentage, yeah.
I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around this.
And this is through NBC News. Misuse of prescription tranquilizers, 5.9% compared to 2.2%.
That's a closer gap.
So you're feeling better about that one.
Yeah, I just feel
both
like
kind of using the tranquilizers the same.
Stop.
Let's tranquilize her up. That way you know which kind of party you want to have. Everyone's going to be down.
Special K.
Yeah, everyone's down. Cocaine, 5% of LGBT people and 1.8% of straight people.
That seems wrong.
I mean, yeah.
Who are they asking? Are they like going to like children? Like, what? How do they?
Yeah, I mean, this
I feel like there's a lot of cocaine use.
That's true. Well, I mean, 1.8% of, like, it's still a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true.
It's still fair enough.
But there's a lot of people not using cocaine.
Yeah, I question this. Hallucinogens, 5% of LGBT people, 1.6% of straight people. So it just keeps, methamphetamine, 2.3% of LGBT people, 0.6% of the straight community.
Someone's lying.
Is it the straights? You're not talking
about the straights are lying.
So there's that information there, right?
Okay.
And so just kind of like breaking it down, I'll have some other numbers for you, too, as we go along. Well, this other one, and this one is from American Progress. So we'll look at two different sort of studies that was done. So we'll go into an American Progress one, right?
Librarian approved.
So we are, I'm giving you different kinds of facts and researches for you to look at for yourself.
Yeah.
So this, let's talk about tobacco. So gay and transgender people, so we got the transgender people in this one.
So they're more already inclusive already.
To a good start, yes. American Progress. They smoke up to 200% more than their heterosexual and non-transgender peers. And there's a little point that I'm going to circle back to that I think is going to make things make a little bit more sense for you.
Okay.
I see you flipping your shit. And I get it. I get it, girl. These numbers are alarming.
It just feels...
This one's also bad. This is just as bad as the other statistic. So alcohol...
Uh-huh.
This one says that there are 25% of gay and transgender people abuse alcohol compared to 5 to 10% of the general population. So we still got you beat there.
Yeah, this is like...
And this one says for drugs, men who have sex with men are 3.5 times more likely to use marijuana than men who do not have sex with men. So we're still beating you on that front. And these men are also 12.2 times more likely to use amphetamines than men who do not have sex with men, which I think makes sense. Because meth is huge, sadly, in the gay community. It's also on the rise. It's highly addictive.
Meth is on the rise?
Oh, yeah, tell me that.
I feel like such a Pollyanna right now. Aww. Because I'm like, how...
Did you see Breaking Bad? It's coming back.
The vanity in me makes me not want to do meth.
Oh, absolutely. Go Google. If you're not sure, you're on the fence about whether or not you want to do meth or not.
Face is a meth.
Go Google a picture.
Yes.
And then look at your face and be like, do I want to miss all this?
I mean, not to be like judgmental, but meth will destroy your face.
It will. And it's also going to destroy your life.
Like, yes.
I'm not out to shame.
No, we're not shaming anybody.
Hey, listen, harm reduction. Take care of you.
If you want to have a good weekend. Find a strategy
that works good for you. But I will tell you, I've seen it. It wreaks havoc on lives. It is completely, incredibly addictive compared to like other substances and stuff that you can do.
Like weed.
It's a little bit more controlled.
Weed doesn't wreck your
Even
face.
Folks that like... You know, drugs that can be very hard on yourself. And so we'll get back to this about how you can party responsibly. And remind me to get back to that.
Okay.
So you're wondering, like, what the fuck? Oh, these numbers?
Yeah.
How does this happen?
And I'm sorry if I sound judgmental.
Oh, you are not judgmental. You are in shock and awe, and I am here. So gay and transgender people have higher rates of substance abuse use that for this, American Progress is saying for three different factors, which kind of makes sense. First, gay and transgender people live highly stressful lives.
True.
Right? They have a lot of stresses coming from prejudice, discriminatory things, even like employment, relationships, healthcare, all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, not to mention internal stuff from growing up.
Exactly. So you've got all that sort of stuff too. So if you could look at it, like all of these, you know, drugs and things like that, it's sort of a release.
Self-medication.
It makes you feel good, right?
Yeah.
And you're usually doing it with other people. It's creating community as well. That this sort of it feeds that craving, that need, that love, and that reassurance in that moment.
Yeah.
There's also, because this one's saying also because of a lack of cultural competency in the healthcare system, discourages, and just I think in general, we don't have a lot of treatment for addiction as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially for folks who are LGBT, there's even less sometimes access to healthcare and access to these things as well. And then, there's extreme targeted marketing efforts by alcohol and tobacco companies to LGBT communities.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's this one fact that I can, let me see if I can find this one fact. So, back in the 1990s, tobacco companies surveyed gay men for their branding choices, which resulted in a new program called Subculture Urban Marketing, or SCUM.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Targeted minority gay men in San Francisco.
What a fucking bunch of assholes.
Mm-hmm.
To be so cavalier in fucking bigoted to name your thing like that mm-hmm. on how to pray and catch people.
Absolutely.
What is wrong with them?
Well, and if you think about it too, specifically, where have LGBT people gone to feel safe and comfortable?
The bar.
The bars. It's mm-hmm. where we found, have been able to find community, right?
Right.
And so it's literally like, also like, it's like, there's so few options for us to, I mean, there's more now, there's sports leagues, there's, but I mean, it's always, because it's always been sort of a cornerstone and a bedrock for right. the community, and there's more that's absolutely growing out of there, but I think, and also, you know, going out, it's fun, and you turn 21 or whatnot,
yeah.
but you've also got all these other stigmatized issues and things like that, and there's just also just more, so you see more people are smoking, more people have access to drugs, and it also becomes sort of more normalized as well within your community.
Mm-hmm.
Creating connections, feel like you have better sex while you're on these drugs. So it kind of all sort of steamrolls all into each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we talked about the discrimination in healthcare. So there's all these different things. Even, I mean, these and LGBT folks even have, you know, discrimination in housing. Like, it's still illegal in some states for folks to be discriminated against in housing.
Mm.
There's still, I think it's like 29 states where you can still get fired for being, you know, LGBT
so fucked up.
Or whatnot.
And this administration is trying to make it across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have that. And then I was kind of curious, so there's that. And I just want to kind of like, you're like, how is it going with minorities?
Yes.
Right? Ooh, yeah.
Here we go. What's going on with us?
Actually, it's kind of interesting. And I'm not going to spend too much time in this because I think you can go out and find the information out there. But it's actually not that bad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually not so bad. So in according to sunrisehouse.com.
Okay. You're pushing my librarian limits with this one, but proceed.
Sunrisehouse.com, they are a treatment facility center.
Okay, all right.
Listen,
all right.
Side eye.
All right.
Correct your gaze.
All right.
Correct your gaze, said the woman who runs the front desk at the Sunrise House. Correct your gaze.
Okay.
So they said, in 2013, the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, the NSDUH, estimated that 21.6 million Americans over the age of 11 abused or were dependent on drugs and alcohol. And it's talked about how different races may view substances abuse and treatment differently because of, like, cultural backgrounds
right.
and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So alcohol usage may be highest among Caucasians, it says.
Okay.
So about 57.7% reporting current alcohol consumption of abuse were Caucasian. So
okay.
Caucasians actually abuse
alcohol
the most. So that was followed by multiracial individuals or those at least of two races at 47.7%.
Okay.
And then
so
African Americans at 43.6%.
Oh.
Hispanics at 43%.
Uh-huh.
And then 38.4%.
For Asians?
American Indians or Alaskan Natives at 37.3%.
Okay.
Asians drink the least at a rate of about 34.5%.
Yeah.
Yeah, of that population.
I think the enzyme probably contributes to that, too.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So of those, like, specific groups, oh, I guess, I mean, that's crazy, about over half of white folks drink, 57%.
I mean, one, there's still the majority in this country.
What?
And there's a lot of, I guess we're talking about percentages.
Yeah, it's like
yeah,
specifically
57% true.
Of white yeah. people drink, and 47% of black folks drink,
mm-hmm.
43% of Hispanics, and then 37.3% of American Indians and Alaskans,
mm-hmm.
and then 34.5% of Asians.
I mean, I don't want to get into why, because then I might sound racist.
Well.
Okay.
But I do think it also might be like a cultural thing, though, too. I
yeah.
think religion plays in a huge thing, too, for some black folks. That
I'm
maybe
sure.
they don't drink for that reason. On my dad's side of the family, and they're pretty religious, like none of them drink.
I mean, if you go to any college in the good old US of A, and you know a frat house, you can see where culture breeds.
Right. Interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I thought that fact was, I was literally just like you. I was mm-hmm. like, when I was like, let's go see how it is over on the races. And
mm-hmm.
it was interesting because it doesn't affect as much. And
right. Because you would think the same reasons that you were talking about with the queer community is coping with a lot of the same things that minorities cope with.
And even, I'm not going to go through the statistics, but even when you break it down for some of the different drugs, that, like, drug usage, it's about the same. Like, the rate of illegal drug usage in the last month among African-Americans, and this study was done a few years ago, back in 2013, mm-hmm. the rate of illegal drug usage in the last month among African-Americans aged 12 and up in 2014 was 12.4% compared to the national average at 10.2%. So it's not that far off. It's a little bit higher. But it's not that far off.
You know what? You bring up a good point about religion. Mm. I feel like a lot of religion will take the place of drug and alcohol abuse or just use. Mm-hmm. But when you are a part of the LGBTQ community, sometimes you are abandoned by the religious community. True. So that might be even more of a way to push you into a coping mechanism.
Well, and plus part in the LGBT community, where does your community mainly gather? It's in the bars. It's literally in the bars. So it's like, maybe literally just change the location. We need to have some more picnics and stuff. But you go to the picnic, we're going to bring the alcohol as well there, too, right?
I put me in a bar, I will have a drink.
She's going to have a drink.
So but I'm a straight.
I put you in a taqueria earlier and you said have a taco. Drink. And you also had a beer. You also had a beer for telling
I'm a part of that high percentage. I drink.
Oh, there she is. She's in it. Neke is also in it. But yeah, like, it's like, even if you look at the rate of binge drinking among African Americans ages 12 and up, it's at 21.6% compared with the national average, which is 23%. Hmm. So I think it was just so fascinating to me.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Because it's so weird that even my own bias had assumed, because I looked at what it was happening for the LGBT community, it's actually not the same for the races.
I'm fascinated by this.
For American Indians, Alaskan Natives age 12 and up, about 14.9% have illegal drug usage. And I think the national average is 10%. Mm. So it's like, again, let me see where the Latino community is. So Asian Americans, 12 and up, the rate of illegal drug usage in the last month, this back in 2014, was 4.1% among Asian Americans, 15.6% among Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. And again, the national average is at 10%.
This is fascinating. I kind of want to, I wish that there was a way that we can survey cultures and see how that plays into the consumption of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I don't know what the reasoning is behind why, I guess, Asian cultures aren't binge drinking. Is it because maybe they have strong senses of family and community, perhaps?
Or is it a physical thing because there's an enzyme that creates the Asian glow, so it's an actual allergy to drinking.
An actual allergy to drinking. Well, looking at their alcohol usage, but that's drug usage. I mean, they can use as much drugs as they want and not have as much allergies. Because the alcohol consumption is 6.7% for Asian Americans compared with the national average. Again, at it says 13.8%. So, oh, and then Hispanics and Latinos, they're at 8.9% for illicit drug usage. And the national average, again, 10.2%. And the rate of alcohol usage for among Hispanics or Latinos was at 24.7%. And again, the national average was, what did I say it was? 20-something. Anyways, like, it's all within, like, the same sort of realm. So that was fascinating.
That is really interesting to me.
So
facts are the best, because they really give it to you kind of cold.
And also, I think, personally, the media really tries to paint black and brown folks as some drunk drug users.
Oh, yeah, like, we're drinking 40s and smoking blunts all the time.
No. That's what they need to do, apparently. I mean, I'm sorry, I can say this because it's my community. The more accurate description is painting LGBT folks as drunken drug users. We need to have a conversation. The facts are there.
I can't believe those statistics that you were telling me before. I have a hard time with it. I don't know why. I feel like the low amounts for the straight community is mystifying to me, because I went to college.
Yeah.
I hang out with straight people. Everybody's doing drugs and drinking too.
But I also think that you're having more children. And I'm not saying all people get sober as soon as they have children, but they're probably partying a lot less, probably using a lot less ecstasy, a lot less cocaine because they got the baby.
So you're thinking more of an expiration date because of children for the straight community.
Yeah. And I think, and again, I think there's also a lot more trauma and stress that's happening mm-hmm. with the LGBT community that mm-hmm. I'm saying that, like, it's important to sort of look at. Mm-hmm. So I think what I wanted to, you know, come back to is that, like, you know, just sort of looking at, like, why we celebrate Pride and what is the reasoning behind it. And mm-hmm. I mean, I'm all for a party. I had a great time this entire weekend too. But mm-hmm. for me, seeing that triage area, it was like, this is not what they were fighting for mm-hmm. when, you know, during the Stonewall riots, you know, or what people have been marching for so long. Mm-hmm. I think it's gotten a little bit too far. So it's like, you know, I would encourage people who do want to party or have a good time to do the research. If you're going to roll ecstasy, there is research out there for you to see what pills it is that you're taking, what does right. what, to not buy in the clubs, or how to roll safe. There's a yeah. website called rollsafe.com
oh, wow.
For you to educate yourself.
Yeah.
And just to be as healthy as possible of how to build in the recovery process, making sure that you're eating, hydrating, being on a buddy system. So I'm not saying, like, don't do your thing, but do it responsibly. And even, you know, that binge drinking is really high in the LGBT community. Yeah. So do it responsibly. Having maybe every other drink a non-alcoholic drink, as my therapist used to say.
Yeah.
Finding other activities that involve not drinking. And for those who there are, I know a lot of people in the LGBT community who are in recovery. It's a very common thing to be sober in the LGBT community because you've gone so far, you lost friends.
Yeah.
Because it's a coping mechanism. And so there's a great video that someone posted in the Facebook group about how to party as a sober person in the LGBT community.
Okay.
It's a great little 4-minute video. Check it out. It's got a lot of great resources and a lot of good stuff for you.
Yeah. I really like that you are bringing this up. It's good, like, kind of food for thought to think about. Even though I may not be a part of the LGBTQ community, I'm still a human living life and consuming
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
And it's always smart to think ahead. Like, yeah, have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I just recently, like, last weekend, I went to, like, a beer festival. And instead of just plowing through the beers like I've done in the past and then feeling terrible the next day, I had a beer, I had a water, I had a beer, I had a water, I had a beer, I had a water.
Mm-hmm.
I got tipsy.
Yeah.
And then the next day I woke up feeling fine.
Absolutely.
And it's about, you want to still continue with your life.
Yeah.
And it's such a loss if you party so hard that you
can't the next day.
Right. Or lose something, even as great as your life,
yeah, you know? And I think we get used to in these ways of how we have fun, it becomes a behavioral thing, and then it becomes right. a habit. And so I'm just saying, I think, like, let's continue to take care of ourselves and
yeah.
also look at the, like, we statistically, if you're in the LGBT community, you're more prone to have issues with alcohol and drugs. So
yeah.
look at it. And also look at it to each other of mm-hmm. like your friends and whatnot. Not you gotta police your friends, but
no.
you, we are each other's family. We find each other that we are each other's family. So I just want us to be as healthy as we possibly can. Just sort of look at what it is. Take a step back. Be aware and mindful about how you're doing it and make the most healthiest choices that you can. I feel like I just got dared.
I know, that I was like, good.
I just went hella, like, dare on you all.
You just did some dangerous minds. You turned that chair around backwards.
I didn't say don't do it, but I said we need to have a conversation.
Let's do it safely.
Do you want to tell me what this is all about? As I walked through the valley of the shadow of drugs, I took a look at this website and realized what I was doing. I'm not gonna take that pill, because if I take that pill, I might die. Happy Pride.
I'm ending on that note. We are in a neck gaze corner.
Title IX. I know about Title IX.
You do?
Oh, a neck gaze. Because I was an RA and we had to learn about Title IX.
Okay.
Now, like CPR, I am glad that you are reminding me of this because I don't really remember. I know it's about sexual harassment. I know I learned about it. And I remember everyone was like, Title IX.
Exactly.
And I don't really, I know it's about sexual harassment.
That's one aspect of it.
Oh, just one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So Title IX, and I really wanted to kind of bring this up because, one, I read an article on feministing.com
hey.
By Dana Bolger. She is basically celebrating the 45th anniversary of Title IX. It's been around for 45 years.
Damn. Mm-hmm. That's older than both of us.
It is. So, basically, I, like you in...
college, university.
You in college.
The schools.
Me too. We have a vague sense of what Title IX is. Yeah. Basically, you generally think, like, don't touch a boob.
If it's not yours, don't touch it. That's what I know. If it's not yours, don't touch it.
So, okay. So, what is Title IX? Title IX is the federal law that prohibits sex discrimination in educational programs and activities that receive federal funding. Okay? So, it basically, the main reason it was created is it lets equal genders play sports.
Oh, okay.
So, it's less about harassment, more about discrimination.
Oh, look at you, Title IX. Okay. Changing it up. I thought you were one thing and you were like, nope, it's me over here.
Mm-hmm. So it's also about preventing people from dropping out of school, from being raped, or from being abused, which is the harassment kind of aspect of it. So, okay. So without Title IX, basically it would allow women to just not be educated. It would just be like, whatever, fuck you ladies.
You ain't gotta be up in this school, but you gotta be up in that kitchen, barefoot pregnant. My high school teacher used to always use that phrase. Women at this point are still barefoot pregnant in the kitchen.
Who said that?
My high school teacher.
Okay, someone should have. See, this is why I'm bringing it up, because a lot of these things that Title IX covers are still fucking happening in the in schools.
Like my high school teacher talked about women being barefoot pregnant in the kitchen.
And remember that Title IX was around at that point, so. That was not 45 years ago.
Mr. Sardi, I'm calling you out. Yes. You're listening to this podcast, we got your number.
So basically, I'm bringing this up so people can think about these certain situations like you just did. Mm-hmm. And if you are in high school or if you have kids that are in schools, anything from preschool to graduate school, that's what it covers.
Okay.
And you've noticed one of these things not happening.
And be like, wait a minute, Title IX.
Time to bring it up.
If you see something, say something.
Exactly.
Title IX.
Okay. So, basically, we know, like what I said before, is Title IX makes sure that there's equality between girls and boys sports, which, I mean, I don't even know if that's really fully fledged.
I want to point Title IX at the NBA,
right?
At the
well, that's
MLB.
Education.
I was ready.
I know.
Did you see? I was ready. But I will even say in college
that's
sports,
what I mean.
There ain't no Title IX.
They basically kind of skim through by just being like, yeah, we have a girls basketball team, but come to the men's basketball team.
They're going to be so good and great. Come to their football. Where's the lady football team?
Exactly. So Title IX is very loose and free. So, okay. Some of the things that, who does Title IX protect? Right?
Everyone.
So, yes. But I'm just going to read from the article right now.
Oh, I thought you were pop-quizzing me. I was ready.
Everyone! So, basically, like I said before, Title IX protects any educational level from kindergarten to graduate school. And it's basically anybody who attends a school that receives federal funding. Mm-hmm. So, that means any public school and pretty much every private college and university, they receive federal funding, as well as a lot of private K-12 schools.
Oh.
They receive federal funding if they provide, like, a free lunch program or something like that. So if they do have a free lunch program at your private school, they receive federal funding, so they are under Title IX.
Okay, so it's like, I got you under Title IX.
Exactly. So it basically is aimed to protect girls and young women, but also it helps protect students who don't conform to traditional gender stereotypes.
I was thinking this is probably going to help to protect transgender students.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or just students who don't claim a gender.
Would that be non-binaries?
Non-binary.
Okay. Yeah.
I think there's gender queer too.
Yes.
Yeah. And it also protects faculty and staff.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. If you are a teacher who works at a federally funded school and you are experiencing some of these biases, you can use Title IX to kind of sue your school.
So it's really honestly like almost all the damn schools.
Yeah.
So it's like really honestly, and is this just for sports?
Mm-mm.
Oh, no, it's not just for sports. I don't know where did I get that from?
It's the main thing. It's like the reason that it got brought up.
So really, like, anytime any of these politicians are trying to do some sort of
bathroom
thing. Yeah. Some sort of gender fuckery and trying to fuck up something. It's
Title IX.
Like literally just point is like Title IX.
Exactly. That's why. So that's why after reading this article, I was so surprised by some of the things that Tunnel 9 covers that are just getting abused on a daily basis. Mm. So they covered this. So here are some of the things that Title IX does. Mm-hmm. It forbids school from discriminating against pregnant and parenting students. Ah. So it is illegal for schools to receive federal dollars to kick students who become pregnant out. Or kick them out of honor society classes. Mm. But they do this all the time. If you are pregnant, you are sometimes forced to leave. Or they put you in reduced, level classes to make it easier for you.
So wait, you're sitting in your honors algebra class and they're like, sorry, Susie, you're pregnant. Get the fuck out of here.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to me, it wouldn't be like, you know, help a village, like help the pregnant woman get the most that she could instead let's shun her for having right. a baby.
Yeah. Also, schools will prevent students who are pregnant from walking in graduation, and Title IX protects those students as well.
Okay, good. But I bet you there are some schools where they prevented
totally.
Some young woman from not being able to walk because she got pregnant. That doesn't make any sense.
I'm sure.
No sense.
It makes no sense at all. Okay. Another thing is, this is one that got me, and this one really is one of my big rubs that pisses me off all the time. So Title IX prohibits discriminatory dress codes. Now, I am a big proponent of saying that dress codes are sexist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really do. And at one of the schools that I used to work at, it was a high school, mm-hmm. they would have a harsh dress code punishment. And it mostly surrounded things that girls would wear. Mm. It would be like, no short skirts, no yoga pants, no tight tops, no, you can't show your shoulders. Mm-hmm. To me, that is highlighting only things women wear. Mm-hmm. Because apparently boys can't control their fucking ding-dong boners.
See?
Meanwhile, boys are walking around in sweatpants where you can see full-on outlines of their dicks.
Yeah.
In, like, fucking no shirts. Just, like, you know, the same sort of double standard.
Well, I mean, were they allowed to sag their pants?
Yeah.
So then their booties are hanging
booties out. Booties hanging out. So I feel like a lot of the times, if you're going to have a dress code, it needs to be a two-way street.
Could they wear hats?
At the school? Yeah.
Take mm-hmm. your damn hat off, boys. Be respectful, gentlemen. Because if you're trying to be like, oh, ladies, I want you to be respectful, then that goes two ways.
Flip it to the
Take
men.
Take your damn
to the
hat
boys.
Off.
And it's so true. And I hate a reasoning that you can't wear tight pants because it might sexually arouse a man. Because who the fuck cares?
So instead, what you need to do is you need to say, listen, young man, mm-hmm. you might get sexually aroused by, you know, this young woman. Deal with it.
No.
Doesn't mean it's an invitation for you to do anything about that arousal.
Exactly.
Instead, we make it this like secret, like keep the women away. Otherwise, hey, boys will be boys. That's literally what the subtext of that is.
It is. And that's why I get so angry. And also because I know that a lot of straight men will get aroused by just about any dumb shit.
Oh.
I remember very vividly that a friend of mine went on a date with a girl and she spilled soda on herself by accident.
And
he sprung a boner.
Really?
And he told me it was so hot.
Stop it.
And I was like, she literally just Amelia Bedelia'd herself and spilled some shit on her. Like, what are we not supposed to spill shit on ourselves just because somebody springs a boner?
Nothing is hotter than an Amelia Bedelia. Just the way you see how she mixed up those pies.
So that's one thing that I think is terrible about dress codes. Here's the other part of dress codes that really pissed me off. A lot of the times, black hair is a part of discrimination for dress codes. Recently, a lot of girls have been kicked out of school, told to go home, told to not participate in things because they had natural black hairstyles.
That is insane.
Which is disgusting. Anybody who does not think, and this goes to black people too, because mm-hmm. there have been a lot of old grandmas out there that will say, ooh, her hair is unkempt and good hair and blah,
she
blah, blah,
need to
bullshit.
Go home.
This is how our hair grows out of our head.
Zit.
And what are we supposed to do? Shun ourselves, put chemicals on our head just so we can go to class?
That shouldn't be it. Again, it's like assimilating to this thing that, like, hey, if you want to do that, go do that. But it shouldn't be a mandatory thing to change everything about. And, like, can you imagine just, like, the effect that, like, what this is happening on these young girls at a mm-hmm. very early age, it just mm-hmm. makes me think back to last segment of, like, this can lead to drugs and mm-hmm. alcohol because there's something wrong with you.
Exactly.
Is what you're telling them.
Exactly. So, that's another thing that Title IX protects. Once again, I want to reiterate that if you are in school, if you know someone in school, if you work at a school and you're experiencing some of these things, which I'm sure you are because this is common.
This is all illegal.
Yeah, this is illegal. Go to ACLU.
damn. I mean, I've seen so many stories that all this shit is illegal. I also saw there was a story about these young boys who all wore skirts to school in mm-hmm. protest of...
What was it? It was a dress code?
It was a dress code. Mm-hmm. These young boys all wore skirts
because
they thought it was, like, unfair. The dress codes were unfair.
Good and for them. So they
wore skirts, right? That's how to
Good
be an
for
ally.
Them. Yes.
And they were just like, my boner might pop out, but I'm going to wear this skirt.
I'm being bold. Plus, I mean, fucking learn how to tuck your boner into your belt strap. Anyways.
What? Who does that?
You never heard about that?
What?
Who? If you spring a boner, you tuck it into your belt. You, like, tuck it up.
I put it off to the side.
Okay. I guess everybody has their own penis
Everyone has
techniques.
A different technique. I'm doing it right now.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's weird.
Okay.
We're talking about Title IX.
I know.
This is too much.
Like I said, Rewind. You don't know what people get aroused by.
You don't know me. You don't know what happens in my pants. It's my right.
Litigation is hot. Okay. Another thing that Title IX protects. So Title IX requires schools to take action to stop anti-LGBT bullying and harassment. So under Title IX, schools must take action to protect students from harassment based on gender stereotyping. And no matter, so basically the Trump administration is fighting this.
Mm-hmm.
Betsy DeVos, asshole, is fighting this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is illegal.
Mm-hmm. How, like, do you know how, like, who passed Title IX? Do we know that?
Why do you ask me these
I'm
questions?
Sorry. And we don't need to, we can table this for another day. We can find that out. We can edit it.
Well, it happened 45 years ago.
Happened 45 years ago. Because, like, I just don't know who has the right to take this away. I don't understand. Like,
our terrible administration, and not to mention the newest
Supreme Court
fucking bigot,
mm-hmm.
and he's going
to
be
the latest bigot to join the team.
Who is like the worst and swaying all the other semi bigots to be bigot?
Sweaty, but
or what?
I thought you were going to say sweaty.
Oh well,
who's the
probably,
worst
I mean.
And sweaty and swaying the other bigots?
I will let those rumors fly for that guy.
You heard it here first.
Because
he is sweaty.
He's literally anti everything that is good.
Sweaty anti man.
Okay, so here's another thing. Title IX protects student survivors of sexual violence and other forms of gender-based violence. So schools must take steps to prevent and respond to gender violence and harassment. Student survivors are entitled to the academic housing and other accommodations they need in order to stay in school and learn. So Title IX requires schools to protect these students to make sure that they are in safe environments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's the thing that we talked about before. The big kicker, I think the reason why Title IX was created.
Mm-hmm.
Equality between boys and girls sports, athletics. So it says that research shows that girls who play sports in high school are more likely than non-athletes to graduate and earn 7% higher wages as adults.
Wow.
I barely played sports, but whatever.
Still getting that paycheck.
Still
you dip your toe in and that's why you qualify and you're getting that 7% more.
And as you know, when you play sports, it's nice to have an audience to come and watch you play
and
sports.
To cheer you. You build so many different fundamentals from that. You learn teamwork. You learn all kinds of, like, you know, about what you can do and challenging yourself.
Right.
That's why we use so many quotes from, like, athletes to inspire people, even, like, as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love listening to stories about athletes because it's sort of that, like, athletes have, there's a certain, like, drill determination that is so helpful for anybody to have in going for your dreams, whatever that you want to do.
Right. So I think it's just as important to have equality in schools. And remember, Title IX covers kindergarten through graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
So if you notice, girls' sports do tend to taper off once you get into the college arena. Go to girls' sports games. Support your female athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Support your women athletes. Because they're out there doing their best as well. And they are just as inspiring in athletics as men are.
Yeah.
And Title IX is protecting that equality.
Yeah.
But you will notice in college sports, a lot of male athletes, especially in basketball and in football, get preferred treatment.
They get, I get a lot of scholarships. I'm sure there are lady scholarships too.
Yeah, there's scholarships for women, but especially in basketball and football. I worked at UC Berkeley for a hot minute.
Tell it.
And they were treated like superstars, which I know for a fact the women athletes were not. And it's mostly because it leads into the NBA and it's all about the money thing.
Yeah.
And of course there's a problem with, are they, they're student athletes, but they're treated like real athletes, so they don't really get time to do, actually get their education.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword, but I feel like it, clearly there's an imbalance.
Right. I mean, this goes back to when I did that sexy expose about the, it was only sexy because I was delivering it. So I was told.
Okay.
by a fan. It was me.
That's good. Fan of yourself. Self-esteem.
You know what? If you, as RuPaul says, if you don't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? I'm my number one fan.
There you go. Can I get an amen?
Can I get an amen? But what was I talking about? Sexy fans?
The sportsman.
Oh, sportsman. Yeah. So it, maybe it starts, there's not even a single female player in any of like the major league sports that is breaking a million.
I know.
And so I think it's like what you're talking about. It starts back in the universities.
Right.
So you university students, y'all love to like have a little protest and have a little cause. So maybe the cause is
support
all these ladies
sports. Women athletes.
Support those athletes because your money speaks. So if you're going to those games and there's dollars that are going into there and that could maybe funnel into more into the WNBA.
Right.
You know, like, it just brings more attention to that.
And it really kind of hones in all the other aspects of Title IX as well. Sports is just one little tiny aspect of Title IX. Mm-hmm. Harassment is another aspect, but they all lead into each other.
Mm-hmm.
If we start going to more women's basketball games, we see women more as equal, we treat them better, you know, maybe they'll get paid more as athletes, maybe we'll get some superstar women athletes back. Basketball players, it all feeds the cycle. You might
get a Wheaties box and a contract.
So I'm just saying, Title IX should not be taken for granted. If you find yourself, like I said before, I'm going to repeat it again. If you find yourself in an educational situation or someone you know and love is in an educational situation and something comes into question, like you're sent home because you're wearing a natural hairstyle, you are you're a non-binary individual and you get discriminated against, they aren't allowing gender-neutral bathrooms, if you are wearing yoga pants and your teacher sends you to go change, bring up Title IX.
Yeah, and in fact, I've got a great little way that you can remember exactly what to say with a little bit of sass.
Okay.
Don't you whine, it's Title IX.
Okay.
So just tell them that.
All right.
Right? Does that work?
Yeah, with some litigation backing it up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you get out of here, pregnant girl, and you're like, don't you whine, it's Title IX. And you stand your ground.
It's true. We got to protect ourselves, especially with our education, because that's literally what gets us through.
Gets us through the day. Sorry, I take a sip of...
No, you know
I
what?
Took a very long
it's
sip
okay.
of LaCroix thinking you're... about exactly what you're talking about. It is so true. Get out there and stand your ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also, Title IX does everything.
It does.
Can we get some props to
it
Title IX?
It covers a lot. I did not remember Title IX.
I thought it was just like, you knew me. I was
just
like,
harassment.
I was like, Aneke, I already know about it. Sex harassment, next subject.
And I was
you
like,
literally
no,
let
you don't.
Read me the list of everything. And it protects everyone and
everybody
thing to create equality. So we got to make sure Betsy Doo-Doo
sucks.
You can do not take
she's
it away.
She's trying to take it away.
And she's never been to any of these schools. I'm over her.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of here, Betsy DeVos. Get out of here.
All right, we've come to it again.
Hey, Poodle.
Well, I don't understand the poodle.
What? You don't understand it?
No.
Well, some people don't want to be called, like, a gender or whatnot, and they might say poodle.
But then you're being called a dog.
Poodles are amazing.
Are they?
There's entire magazines devoted to just
poodles. I know about poodle magazines.
There's a magazine devoted to just poodles. Poodles are dope. Do poodles, are they born like that? Like, all, like, with their poofs?
No, they're just fuzzy dogs.
That is fucked up.
And then they cut them into the shape.
I gotta say,
well, it's not fucked up. It's just a haircut.
Yeah, but it's a weird haircut. Like, who was like, you know, it's gonna look cute? A snip, 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 snip. These puff palms.
The French.
All over. Y'all are, you know, I'm gonna leave it there. I'm gonna leave it there. It's just sometimes, like, I think some of the dog breeds are a little weird.
Yeah, dog breeds can be weird.
The ones with, the hot dog dogs.
Wiener dogs.
Like, who bred that? I feel so bad for them. Like,
people always do that.
People breed weird, weird dogs.
Like, I know. That. Dogs have changed. There was an article I read where, like, certain breeds of dogs have changed in, like, 30 years.
Damn.
I know.
Because we made that.
Like, we made that.
We're like, you know what? I want a dog that looks like this. Mm-hmm. Like, we fucking made that.
But it's also kind of fascinating because they kind of they domesticated themselves.
Or, like, I mean, who really is the master? I mean, dogs are hella smart if you think about it, because they were like, I'm going to link up with this person.
True.
They're going to do all the work for me. I saw three dogs in a stroller the other day.
I know, that's a little ridiculous. Well, when you have a dog, you know that...
You're in charge. But, like...
Because they eat their own poo.
True. Okay. But it does... But it's like, do you think dogs are also, because we're evolving and we're getting more technology and more things, and dogs are also, they reap all those benefits along with it. They get, like, better, I think dogs are treated better nowadays than they are than
totally.
They used to be. There's doggy hotels.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all you need to do is just go to a country that where dogs aren't valued as much, and they're just, like, roaming the streets looking sad. And then you come over here, and there are people, like, feeding their dogs from their own mouths.
Yeah, literally.
I know.
But do you know, I was talking to someone, it was like, you can't breed cats too big, because once you breed a cat too big, it's a lion, or it's like a panther.
No.
Like, cats get so...
Domesticated cats only get as big as the Maine Coon.
As who? What'd you call me?
The Maine... Stop it!
What was that? That's alarming.
You haven't heard of the Maine Coon?
No! Who is that? Hey, please stop saying this. I am literally clutching my pearls.
Yes.
I have a necklace.
He's clutching his crystal.
I have a crystal to protect me from this evil that she is speaking upon me.
It's one whole word.
Okay.
I think.
Oh, God.
It's a giant-ass cat, too.
Oh, but who would want... Would you want a giant-ass cat? That seems terrifying.
I don't like cats,
I'm not
period.
A big cat person either, but, like, it seems like... I mean, you see how big some of those dogs get. Like, who's going to get a cat that big? It's a panther.
They're cute.
It's a panther. But that's still, that's not like, I mean, you see how big, like, Beethoven, you're not going to get a cat Beethoven
no.
size.
No.
Because that, essentially, if it
but
gets.
But they don't do that, though.
Why?
They just don't. Cats aren't.
Ah!
I just showed a picture of a Maine Coon.
That's like a lion. That's terrifying. Please don't have those in your house. It will eat your face.
I just don't like cats.
Yeah. You're not on trial here.
I know. I mean, people like cats. People love a cat. A lot of librarians like to like cats and talk about how much they fucking like cats. But a cat to me is just like...
An allergy.
Yes.
I am super allergic.
I'm allergic to cats.
That is a big cat.
They're giant cats.
They are. I mean, you just don't see them often. I'm curious as to why people don't get them as big. But,
because cats generally aren't big animals.
They're not down for that. They're like, I'm not here for this.
No.
Oh, that is a huge cat.
I'm just showing James pictures of cats.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there are... Please, you can Google giant cat pictures. They do exist. They're just not as common.
No. And dogs breed larger.
But could you imagine, like, you know, people let their cats roam free? Saw a giant-ass cat running around. It's
terrifying.
You
know what
terrifying.
I saw recently? Hmm. So I live in a neighborhood where they have, like, cat colonies, where there's, like, 20...
I thought you said cat calling.
No. I would move.
Okay,
but,
good. I was like, this is okay.
But... They, like, have, like, groups of 20 or 30 cats live around the neighborhood, and they all hang out, because there's, like, one cat woman. But anyways.
Wait, instead there's a cat woman, like Holly Berry? Is Holly Berry
more like the other woman that was, like, guiding her, remember?
Oh, yeah,
like
that crazy, creepy one.
So, but I'm not calling my neighbor crazy or creepy. but there was a cat called a munchkin cat. That's a type of cat that, like, is a dachshund cat. So it has tiny little stubby legs and a long body.
Ah.
And I saw one running across the street recently, and it had a snaggle tooth, and it stopped in the middle of the street. It was, like, black and furry, and then it looked at me. It just looked at me with a stupid snaggle tooth and then scurried away with its little, like, munchkin legs.
Get out of here, munchkin snaggle tooth cat.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know. Anyways, good show.
Good show!
If you want your snaggle tooth cat, you can get one at,
snaggletooth.com.
There's a website for that. There's an app for that as well. It's been a great episode. What?
We want to thank our music.
If you've ever wondered who has done the music for our show, it's about a great band called Brownout. So big props to them and thank you for the music.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for the music. It's really lovely. Everybody loves it.
I like that song.
Well, get me on a track, Brownout. Okay. Get me on a track. Play my track, Brownout, DJ. Play my track.
Also,
what up?
We are on Twitter.
We're on the tweets.
Minority Corner with a K.
Yeah. Definitely follow Aneke at Ms. Fitzy.
Yeah, Ms. Fitzy. M-I-Z-Z.
She read in the gospel. I got an email about what she had said one day.
I just, you know, I'm having fun on there.
I don't tweet that much.
James does not tweet.
At James Arthur M underscore M, and they're involved there too.
Clearly, James doesn't tweet.
I just get the emails about when Aneke tweets.
But James
I get an email about when you tweet. I'm so old school. I'm like, I get an email that, oh, Aneke tweeted. I want to go look at it.
I want you to get a letter in the mail.
Oh, Aneke sent a tweet about 2014 Janet Jackson Super Bowl. I guess it's 2004.
Oh, God. Speaking of Janet Jackson's, a couple people were shocked that you didn't realize that Beyonce had twins.
Okay, listen. I am not on trial here, okay? I am living my best life, okay? Get out of here. They're going to come after me just like they came after Becky with the good hair.
But you know about fucking Janet Jackson's old baby. Yeah.
I mean, I know what Janet ate for breakfast. I mean, I know all about what she does. I know my Janet. My Miss Janet. My Miss Janet, because she nasty.
Oh, so good. We're also on Facebook.
We have a Minority Corner Kids Playground group as well.
Yeah, people are sharing shit, talking it out, living life.
Absolutely. They're living large and in charge, just like Charlene in charge. Fuck Charles in charge.
That took me on a journey.
I had to
for
bring
like
you
2 seconds.
I knew
that
I was going
a
with
wild.
It. Fucking hate Charles.
That was
in charge.
Almost like a popper of a drug of a sentence now, where it was just quick and fast.
You know about poppers? Ooh, girl, look at you.
I told you I've been around the block.
She has been around the block, but fuck you, Charles in charge, if you're listening. Isn't that Scott Bayo or Bayo?
Who cares?
Yeah, out of my face. Anyways, Aneka's gonna do some poppers and we're out.
Bye.
Pop safely. Edit it up.
I'm Hal Lublin.
I'm Danielle Radford.
I am Michael Eagle.
And we are the hosts of Tights and Fights, Maximum Fun's newest podcast dedicated to all things wrestling.
We'll be talking about Sasha Banks, the women's revolution, Sasha Banks, the brand split, and Sasha Banks' wigs.
And we'll also be talking about wrestler fashion. Some wrestlers wear too many clothes. Some wrestlers don't wear enough clothes at all.
And I'll be doing impressions of all your favorite wrestlers.
New episodes Thursdays on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, yeah, dig it.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
A lot of times my instincts are wrong. They're mostly wrong, but they're not wrong in the sense that, like, I misread somebody. They're just extremely limited to my, you know, to my idea of who they are.
That was Mark Maron. I'm Jesse Thorne. I'm the host of NPR's Bullseye. I'm so excited to tell you about my new show, The Turnaround. Join me as I sit down with some of the best interviewers in the world to ask them about how and why they do what they do. We'll go deep. Some of the biggest names in media, everybody from Terry Gross to Jerry Springer to Combat Jack. That's all on The Turnaround, 2 episodes a week this summer. Subscribe now. Tell a friend.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.